Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban.
How are you doing today, Bob?
Doing all right, Eric. It's a tough world out there, that's for sure. But things are at least good in the office and, up and down the chain.
I'm glad to hear it. And let's talk about it. You know, there's been a lot of cannabis developments in the last week, but there's also been a lot of other developments. And I'm talking, of course, about the protests around the country and now around the world in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Bob.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, ultimately, this is something that's been building, right? The tension surrounding police brutality, for perhaps lack of a better way to put it, the Black Lives Matter movement, those things have been simmering, if not coming to a rolling boil for some time now. And, you know, a lot of attention was drawn to Colin Kaepernick and the NFL and seemingly just pushed aside as a topic, not addressed, certainly, to anyone's satisfaction, perhaps not even addressed at all. And those tensions have boiled over due to the unfortunate murder of George Floyd on May 25th in Minnesota. And we've seen how that's caused people to rally. People of all shapes and sizes, of all colors, by the way, I would note. There's been some theories about, you know, white supremacist groups, et cetera, sort of adding fuel to the fire during these protests. I don't know about any facts to support any of that. I really just don't. That might exist. I just haven't seen it. But, you know, trying to focus on the positive, there are folks that have come together from different walks of life, and they're peacefully protesting. They're sending messages. They're marching. They're trying to effectuate a social change here, because it didn't happen, as I mentioned, over the last couple of years as this topic has been coming about. But, there's been unfortunate violence associated with it. It is quite alarming to see police across the United States of America dressed like characters from one of these Xbox games. I don't think any of us were aware that the militarization, perhaps, of our police force had occurred while no one was watching, because it hasn't been in our face. But trying to look at the social movement around us and trying to figure out what it is that we can do as lawyers, as a law firm, as individuals, it made me think about what is the desired outcome. What's the goal or the objective? And I don't say that, you know, condescendingly. It seems to me, if you look at history, we looked at the civil rights marches in the 60s. And those marches, of course, expressed a similar kind of anger, appropriately so. And it led to legislation at the federal level. Congress passed our Civil Rights Act within a very short period of time after those sort of demonstrations, those peaceful movements had resulted in policy change at the federal level. It's unclear to me what and how you solve this problem. I'm not saying that the organizers and the protesters don't have a mission or an objective. I'm just saying it's unclear to me what that objective is. And it seems like that you would want to channel all of this energy not just to bring additional social awareness, which is extremely critical, particularly those that ignored the whole Colin Kaepernick issue and the Black Lives Matter issue previously, but how do you channel that in a way that it will both satisfy folks that change has been made and also in a documented, meaningful way? Is it a scenario where you have legislation that flows from this, either at the state level or the federal level? And by the way, I note that some of our leaders are absent in this discussion right now. And, you know, I'm not going to get into commentary about our president and the administration, because that's been a void for many, many months now in terms of leadership, not commenting politically, just in terms of leadership. but I'm not seeing other political leaders. There's more out there than Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, and President Trump. There are leaders in the Democratic Party and in the Republican Party, and I'm not seeing those leaders speak up. I'm not seeing those leaders channel this emotion, what's happening out there in the world, into something that can be meaningful by way of policy change. And that's really ultimately what needs to come out of this. Certainly social awareness, certainly an acknowledgement by the Minnesota authorities that these individuals need to be arrested, and the three other police officers were indeed arrested. But how do you take all of that and create a potential solution? And nothing's going to be a solution that satisfies everybody. Let's face that and understand that from the beginning. But how do you take meaningful steps forward so that this issue can be addressed? The issue of racial justice in America and the issues surrounding police brutality and just the unfair treatment of black folks and certainly other minority populations by law enforcement in the United States of America. Because the world is watching. We were talking earlier, and these protests have cropped up in other places around the world, in France, in other European countries. So people are recognizing this issue on a global scale, and absent notice of the protests and the message that's trying to be sent, what do we expect to happen? What change can we expect? We need to channel that into some sort of specific action. Because if you're waiting for your leaders to come up with that action, oh, because they see the civil unrest, they see people seeking change, why would we leave that up to our leaders who have been marginally successful, if not inept, perhaps, in leading and causing change for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the political divide within the United States of America. So that's what I'm getting at, Eric. And, you know, that's the thing that I see is missing. I'm not saying it's out there, but I'm just saying that there doesn't seem to be a concerted mission that provides a solution, legislative or otherwise. And if there is, that is what needs to be a focus, that singular message.
Well, Bob, that was there's so much to dig into there. I have two follow-ups. I'm just trying to think right now, trying to formulate how I want to put these to you. The first one, to go back to what you said, you talked about the 1960s and the civil rights legislation that was passed at that time. And I want to just touch on for a moment that these things don't happen in a vacuum. You know, you mentioned that, of course, George Floyd, this is not the first time this has happened. There is a climate. These things have been happening for a long time. The social awareness has been growing, and it's not entirely dissimilar to how it was in the 1960s, where you have a climate that starts to pull these forces together, pull people together, and it enacts the change. And I would love to hear you talk just for a second about this happening during this COVID time. Because to me, it seems like it's created, in some sense, people at home, people having more time, people maybe spending more time on social media. They're closer to it in a strange sense, maybe because of the COVID pause. I don't know. What are your thoughts on how COVID and these protests, this movement that's growing, how is it connected?
It's not a coincidence that we're seeing this uprising right after the lockdown began to lift. What I mean by that is people have been locked down. They've been relegated to their homes. And not everybody, let's face it, is in a pleasant home scenario. They're unemployed in larger numbers than we've seen in a long, long, long time. They're bored. They're angry now. They're angry. All of those factors create a quote-unquote perfect storm for what we're seeing happening before our very eyes. So this is not, again, it's not unusual. I mean, if you think about in times when there's been violence in American cities or uprisings, it's because it's an unusually hot summer or there's other things that have already stressed people to the point where this just pushes them over the edge. And again, I'm not saying on its own that this issue should not elicit the kind of protest or the kind of reaction that we've seen. It absolutely can lead to that. And it's a natural reaction, but it's all of those other factors that compounded it and make it so in your face, for lack of a better way to put it. Now, I've always said, you know, as we relate to COVID, fear is no way to live your life. You know, I actually, it's a bad time to make a joke, but I remember the line from a particular Will Smith movie, and he said, "Fear is not real. Danger is real." So if you take fear, if you're scared of something, just disregard the fear. And that's the way I think so many of us lived our lives under the COVID scenario. Not that it's gone, but it's just less emphasized right now. Don't live your life in fear, because fear is not real. Be smart, be educated, make decisions, and try to minimize your exposure to the virus. Well, now it's anger, another sort of useless, wasted emotion, or not even anger. Anger's, it's the hatred. It's just hatred is a waste. Take that energy and channel it. Take that fear from COVID and channel it into doing something positive. Take the anger and the hate and channel that into something that's positive and productive. And it's a lot easier to sit here in a chair, talk to you, and say that that's what we should be doing as a society than actually putting it in practice. But it seems to me that it is no way to live lives to be driven by fear or hatred. And that those emotions, those reactions, again, they're not real. It's just a reaction that our body produces. We can accept it or reject it or channel that energy into something else. That's ultimately where people need to go with this. And that's what I'm getting at when I talk about what's the channel, what's the focus, what's the solution to any of this stuff. And that's where I think we should be placing our energy. There are people that are angry in the streets. They've set the table. The folks before them, Colin Kaepernick, beyond, have set the table for this as an issue. Now something needs to be done about it. And if there is a solution or a desired effect, let's channel that fear and that hatred into something positive and productive. But again, it is no coincidence that this type of major reaction happens on the heels of COVID because of all those other things that just stress human beings to the point of breaking. And I'm not saying what we're seeing is human beings breaking, but it's a extreme reaction, rightfully so, to just all of these stresses that are going on in the world right now.
Well, and just following up quickly on the note of channeling that energy and effectuating social change, I'm going to attempt to draw a comparison to the cannabis industry and to the history of cannabis prohibition. Maybe it's an inappropriate place to draw a comparison, but you have seen all of the policy, all of the work that has gone into drafting, whether it's a bill, whether it's a piece of legislation, whatever it is to actually make marijuana legal. There are steps of action to be taken. There are ways to effectuate change. It takes a heck of a lot of work, and it takes having, I don't know, what does it take? I guess that's the question, Bob. Maybe it's not a fair comparison to this movement, but I just look at the path that cannabis has taken, going from an illegal substance to now a multi-billion dollar legal commodity, and that took a lot of the same ingredients, if you will, to get there. So,
no, it's a good point, and it's a good discussion point. As you said, it's probably not apples to apples in terms of comparison, but it is an interesting thing to look at. If you look at history, we did have civil rights legislation. We did have market movement at the policy level, at the federal government level, to try to level the playing field, to try to eliminate discrimination from just basic things such as, you know, shopping, buying things for your family, going to work, getting on a bus, so forth and so on, education. All of these things came to a head. So this issue is once again come to a boil, and it's back at us, the issue of civil rights and discrimination and leveling that playing field. and how you do those things. So that's perhaps what's different about it, aside from obviously the subject matter, is it's come back around, and it's something that needs to be addressed again and better and differently. Now, to your point, things can happen that you would never expect to happen. And I don't mean you or I ever expect to happen. I mean society as a whole. I mean, look at things that have happened over time. We've seen women's suffrage. Women could vote. Back when women couldn't vote, most people in society probably said it's always going to be that way. Again, a terrible thing to believe, but that was the time, right? Gay marriage. Rights associated with being homosexuality and the entire community therefrom. Those communities are recognized under the law right now, protected in certain respects. Society has shifted its thinking. But 30 years ago, maybe even a lot less than that, that would have been out of the question in so many people's minds. It happened. And also, as you suggest, cannabis. The fact that we have a lawful, regulated cannabis marketplace, when just a few short years ago, it was a Schedule I, still a Schedule I substance, but there was no movement. There was no possibility this was going to be anything other than maybe, just maybe, in liberal jurisdictions and liberal cities, we would have relaxed criminal justice laws surrounding marijuana. But we're talking about an industry that has grown up and come from a place that nobody would have seen it going. In fact, the activists and the folks that have gotten us to this point, not only did they not necessarily see it coming this way or this fast, but they don't like what it's become. But that's another topic for another day. The point is, change can happen. Change can happen even in the face of great odds, and change can happen even if it just is the most unlikely thing that you can possibly imagine. And in a politically divided America, where we have parties and individuals dug in so hard on one side of the fence or the other, not listening, not tolerating the other side, is that a conducive environment, I would ask, for Congress to pass some sort of effective bipartisan legislation, whatever that is, to address the current scenario? Or do we simply require politicians, policymakers, to get up and admit that this is a problem? Is that really the objective here? Whatever the objective is, it can be achieved, because we've seen these things happen time and time again in history. And what you think is impossible today is not impossible tomorrow, so long as there's a dedicated effort to change it and a proposed solution. You can't just be angry and say, I want change, whatever the issue is. You have to say, here's why, and then you have to present a range of solutions. And you're not going to get everything you want. No one ever does. But you're going to get something if it's done properly. And that's the piece that I feel is missing. It might be out there. I'm sure it's out there. There are people far smarter than any of us in this room that have been thinking about this and putting their efforts towards this for a long, long time. But it doesn't seem to have made the rounds on social media, the traditional media, the fake news, or anything else. What is the solution here? I just not seeing it.
Well, Bob, I think one of the challenges is that everybody has a role to play. The challenge is figuring out what that role is. I want to highlight Tay Darnell, who is associated with the Hoban Law Group, who is offering pro bono legal services to any protesters that get into trouble. So huge shout out to Tay. But Bob, I guess, what would you say to someone who's trying to figure out where they stand in all of this, how they channel that energy, that anger, frustration, whatever it is, into something productive, something to get us toward everything you've talked about?
Well, I do want to just recognize the point you made about Tay. Tay is a great friend, a great attorney, and just, you know, an even better person on top of all those things. And what you see with Tay is what you get. He is what he appears to be, and that is the best compliment you can give to people in this day and age in so many ways. But, you make a good point. That's Tay's contribution in many ways, and not limited to that, because I know he's involved in many other things. But how does everybody participate? How does everybody help? You know, not every person out there is motivated or participating in protests. Maybe they should be. Not every person out there is connected to policymakers and legislators. so that they can't have that influence. Not every person out there has a deep pocketbook that they can contribute towards different groups and organizations. So the question is finding your slot, but still moving it in that direction towards trying to make some sort of meaningful change here. And, you know, that's the thing that I look for our attorneys across the entire Hoban Law Group and across, you know, our respective friend networks and our networks at large. How can we channel the energy in a way that would utilize our strengths, our experience, our connections to take meaningful steps towards change here? And, you know, right now, and it's early in this, even though it has been 7 or 8 days already, I'm a bit at a loss. You know, we certainly back our friend Tay, and we've put certain things in place so that we can help various individuals in various ways that have been affected by not only COVID, the present scenario, but how can you find your slot? How can you find your lane? How can you be effective? People are asking these questions every day, and that's the kind of thing that I think we need to put some more thought towards, because I'm just not seeing enough concrete options that enough people can embrace based on where they are in life to try to help and make that change occur. And I know they're out there. It just, that's the topic I think that we need to continue to flesh out and also get perspective from guests that we talk to on the Hoban Minute as things evolve.
Absolutely. Sometimes asking the question is really the first step. But Bob, I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts on this topic, and we'll be touching base soon.
Thanks again, Eric.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.